Book 4. O brave new world that has such people in't. William Shakespeare, The Tempest. Arrival. Once he'd sealed the helmet to his suit's neck ring, Brad went back through the short, cramped passageway to the hatch, hunched over slightly to keep his helmet from scraping the overhead. As he reached a gloved hand to push the button that opened the hatch, he saw that his hand was trembling slightly. "Ready to open hatch," he said. The controller's voice replied, "Clear to open hatch." Brad leaned on the button, and the hatch slid up, almost noiselessly. And there it was. Planet Gamma. An alien world that no human had set foot upon. To his staring eyes, it looked almost like Earth, but not quite. The green grass waving slightly in the breeze was darker than any grass he had seen before. There were forested hills in the distance, also deeply green. And far beyond them, craggy gray mountains that seemed to be floating on a bluish haze above the rolling horizon. No animals visible, no insects buzzing. The only sounds were the soft sighing of the wind and Brad's own breath gushing out of him. "You are cleared to leave the shuttlecraft," the controller's voice prompted. "Right," said Brad. He started down the short aluminum ladder, stepping carefully in his heavy boots. "Wouldn't want to fall on my face the first time a human steps onto an alien planet." He immediately remembered that humans had walked on New Earth, the planet of the star system Sirius. But that was an artificial world, constructed by the predecessors and populated with human-like creatures. That had been humankind's first contact with aliens. But here, this planet Gamma, this was a real, natural world populated by genuine aliens, creatures who had evolved here naturally. And I'm going to make contact with them. The thrill of landing melted away after half an hour of trudging across the meadow, sweating inside his biosuit despite its internal climate control. Mithra was an angry red dot high in the sky, glaring down at him. The woods that fringed the meadow still seemed kilometers away. One boot ahead of the other, Brad told himself as he slogged away. The meadow seemed empty of animal life, not even a field mouse or an insect. Maybe they're frightened by my presence, Brad thought. Maybe they can sense that I'm an alien intruder and they're keeping their distance. More likely, the noise and shock of the shuttlecraft's landing sent them all scuttling into their holes. How will the humanoids react to me, he wondered. Outwardly, Brad looked very much like the bipedal natives of Gamma. Tall and lean, the chalky surface of his biosuit spotted with irregular splotches of blue and purple, his head a conical cylinder with two bulging eyes on either side. It was easy enough to look up from inside his helmet. The one-way plastic glass was transparent. Brad saw the lopsided crescent of Beta halfway up from the horizon. He knew it was his imagination, but the planet seemed larger, closer than when he'd seen it from the shuttlecraft. As he approached the woods, he saw that the trees looked different from any he remembered of Earth. Some of them had twisty, sinuous trunks studded with snaky branches and broad, flat leaves. Others were tall and straight, soaring skyward like redwoods, no branches until high above. Instead of leaves, they seemed to bear clusters of pods, so deep a green they looked almost black. There were bushes between the trees, but they were sparse enough so that they presented no real obstacle to his walking through them. The ground was rising gently, Brad saw as he checked his map display, flashed against the inner surface of his helmet. It showed he was on the right track to reach the village they had selected as his objective. "MC, are you there?" he asked in a whisper. "Yes," came the familiar voice. "You are 2.6 kilometers from the center of the village." "Thanks." "You are welcome." MC's politeness seemed almost silly. Brad wormed his arm out of its sleeve and took the water nipple between his index finger and thumb. The drink tasted flat, stale. One of his first tasks would be to test the water in one of the local streams to see if it was drinkable. If not, he'd have to drink water recycled from the suit's supply. "Drink my own piss," he thought with a grimace of distaste. Something flashed past to his left. An animal, Brad thought. Something small and furry had scampered into the bushes that hugged the bases of the big, straight-boled trees. Even though he couldn't see the critter now, Brad felt better, happier. He knew from the earlier uncrewed landing vehicles that the planet teemed with animal life, but actually seeing one lifted his spirits. Now that he was in among the trees, he saw bright-colored birds swooping past, most of them high above, but a few lower, closer. Watching the darting flight of the lower ones, Brad thought there must be insects that they were chasing. And from 20 meters above him, a small furry animal clung upside down to a tree's trunk and chittered away at him. Grinning, Brad thought, a one-man welcoming committee. Then he sobered and guessed, more likely, he's scared, defensive. The ground's slope got steeper, and Brad began to realize that his suit's weight was far from negligible. He was sweating heavily by the time he reached the crest of the rise. And there it was. The village, down in the hollow below him. Slowly, awkwardly, Brad sank to his knees in the cumbersome suit, then flatted out onto his belly. He fingered the control pad on his left sleeve, and the electro-optical binoculars built into the helmet slid in front of his eyes. The village. 4, no, nearly 5 dozen round, domed structures stood in a pair of concentric circles around a cleared area of packed earth. Walkways of similarly cleared ground separated the structures from each other. The building's walls seemed to be smooth, dried mud, flat, dun in color. The domed roofs were made of interwoven branches. Brad saw wheeled carts and larger wagons, most of them sitting idle in the village center. A few were being pulled by six-legged animals the size of ponies. On the other side of the village, cultivated fields stretched outward to the end of the hollow, row after neatly tended row. Brad saw greenish plants more than a meter tall. People moved among the rows, harvesting the plants by hand, with sickles that appeared to have metal blades. A stream meandered around the outer edge of the hollow. Several of the aliens were drawing water from it and toting heavy buckets back to the buildings. The structures seemed pretty much the same size and the same design, round, domed, single-floored, with one window each. Brad could only see one door in each building. Then he recognized that one of the buildings was noticeably larger than the others. It stood on the inner circle, and a half-dozen gamins seemed to be standing at its front entrance, gesticulating. Longhouse, he guessed, with loafers, just like home. The sun was lowering toward the distant hills, Brad saw. He no longer thought of the star as Mithra. It was this world's sun. And the direction in which it was setting was west by definition. Time to hunker down for the night, he told himself. He slithered down the slope, away from the village, until he thought it was safe to climb to his feet. They can't see me from down here, he thought. After munching down condensed food tablets, Brad called MC. Did you see the village? He half-whispered. I saw everything that you saw, the computer replied. It's exciting, isn't it? If I had emotions, I suppose it would be. Brad chuckled softly. You should report to the controllers, MC reminded him. But they see everything we do, don't they? Yes, but they still expect a report from you. Brad nodded reluctantly and called the controllers. You found the village right on schedule, said the disembodied voice. Brad frowned inwardly at the thought of being tied to a schedule. A new voice, feminine, announced, This is Madeira, medical department. We need to go over your physical condition. You have the readouts, don't you? Brad asked. Of course, but we need your input as well. Protocol. Brad grumbled to himself as he answered the medical technician's questions. Busy work, he thought. They've got all the sensors' data, everything from my heart and breathing rates to the amount of water I've lost from sweating. As if she could hear his thoughts, Madeira said, You've lost a bit more water than we expected. I've been sweating. It was a long walk and it's hot down here. It's going to get a lot colder pretty soon, she replied. The recycling system is working, isn't it? A moment's pause, then, checking the readouts. Yes, the recycler is puttering away right on the curve. Good. You're due for sleep in another hour. I'm setting up camp here. That's scheduled for tomorrow. Again with a schedule, Brad groused to himself. Then he thought, no sense arguing with her, or any of them. I'll hunker down here for the night. Then tomorrow morning I'll walk back to the shuttle and haul out the camping gear. On an impulse, he asked, have you detected anything dangerous in the atmosphere? Madeira had to switch him over to the controller in charge of checking the environment. The man's voice finally told Brad, we haven't detected anything harmful in the air. Of course, the samples we've studied didn't come from precisely your location. But I could take off this helmet for the night, couldn't I? He could sense the controller shaking his head. Against protocol. You wouldn't want the local bugs nesting in your ears while you sleep. Brad had to admit, no, I wouldn't. He slept with the helmet on. It was uncomfortable, but he had no dreams. At least none he could remember the next morning. It took Brad 2 trips to the shuttlecraft before he could assemble a reasonably comfortable base camp. At last, though, he had erected a cylindrical plastic shelter sealed and inflated with breathable air, an almost comfortable bedroll, minuscule cook stove, and the communications gear. All the comforts of home, he told himself. Inside the shelter, he could peel himself out of the cumbersome suit and helmet and sleep more contentedly. His dream came back his first night inside the shelter, but it was muted, somehow a bit different, not as biting. For 5 days, Brad observed the aliens in their primitive village, and nights. Their routines were a simple round of working in the fields by day, then coming to their homes at sunset, building a fire in front of each building, and cooking a communal meal in big earthenware pots. After they ate, they went inside the huts and slept. What went on inside their circular homes, Brad could not see from his perch on the rim of the hills encircling the village. A pretty boring life, he concluded. Up in the morning, work all day in the fields, then eat and sleep. At least, he assumed they slept. He couldn't see any lights from inside the huts, only the flickering embers of their cook fires outside. Within less than an hour, the entire village went dark. When they slept, Brad slept. He resisted the urge to sneak into the village at night and peek into those windows. The predecessor's earlier probes had determined that the Gamans were hermaphrodites, sexless. So when they slept, Brad thought, they slept. No romantic maneuvers. By the 5th day, Brad realized that not all the aliens went into the fields to work. There was always a cluster of them gathered around the biggest building in the village, their city hall, as Brad thought of it. But then he realized that that was the wrong name for the structure. It's a longhouse, like the longhouses that early societies on Earth built for their village chieftains. It was difficult to tell if they were the same people each day. Brad found it hard to distinguish one of the Gamans from another. But he could detect no obvious signs of rank among the loafers of the longhouse. No individual received recognizable signs of deference. What would their signs of deference be, he wondered. Asking MC didn't help. Insufficient data for a meaningful reply, the master computer answered to his questions. At last, Brad called Littlejohn. I don't think I can learn much more about them from this distance. I'm ready to go down and show myself to them. In the miniaturized communications screen, Littlejohn's dark face looked startled. That's a major decision, Brad. We'll have to get Kossoff to agree to it. Brad nodded. He had expected that reaction. Okay, he said. Let's talk to Kossoff. Conference.